I know.
Blog Talk Radio.
Wow, that is.
Go figure.
That is atrocious. Man. Jumped the gun there a little bit, but we can hope. Welcome.
Playoffs.
Yeah, and Irma jumped the gun a little bit there, but what the hell? A little belief's okay, but a little hope's okay, but you got to get that sucker sewed up first. But anyway, welcome everyone. Welcome to Clawburn Time, issue number 626. New Orleans Saints Chicago Bears NFL Week 11 Extravaganza. Or whatever the hell we want to call it. Okay. Well, look, ladies and gentlemen, either way, I am pumped up and excited finally this year because of a lot of extenuating things that should have nothing to do with football. I've been a lot of dampers put on my season a lot this year, so it's been a challenge to fight it. But I knew the only way to truly fight it was for my team to really get me excited about the season. And I've been refraining from getting too excited, but after last week's, which we'll talk about in a little bit, after Week 10's performance, I'm getting pretty excited. I can't lie anymore. I can't really tamp it down too much anymore. That was a thing of beauty that we witnessed in Week 7 for the Saints, but we'll get on that prematurely. Immaturely, or some kind of maturely, I don't know. But first, I want to welcome everyone here who is out there, whether you're listening on the downloads, out there on the feeds, or live, or any other way. The secret is to bang the rocks together, guys. sorry. And I will announce, let's see, a few, little bit of an announcement. Because I don't have a lot of flexibility or leeway in the Geek Show schedule next week, for better or worse, I can't do it Monday or Wednesday, and I might even get screwed on a Tuesday. I don't know yet, depending on what, all kind of stuff going on, but I'm going to try my best. I've already scheduled it to be here Tuesday night to review the current DCEU movie Justice League. Now, I know my good buddy Michael, who has joined me tonight, has not seen it yet. If he plans to, he will be more than welcome to sit in with me to review it, but if not, you're not missing out on much, buddy. I don't know if you plan to see the thing or not, but
I am leaning towards seeing it. I'm not totally certain. Since it's Thanksgiving week, it's a little bit different, you know.
Yeah.
If I do drag my butt in to see it on Tuesday, then I will let you know and try to get in on the review action there on Tuesday night. I will, like I said, I'll let you know if I do. Don't count on me, but if I can, I'll be there.
Well, if you are, as you know, my friend, you're always you always have a seat open to you. And if not, no biggie, I'll wing it on this one.
I understand.
Again, I'm not recommending it to anyone. I'm also not saying some of you might be surprised by some of my review. So some of you might be a little bit.
Looks like it's going to be a little disappointing from a box office perspective this weekend.
Yeah, starting to see that, but that won't surprise me a whole lot.
Yeah, the premise at this point of a team of heroes teaming up against a CGI army is kind of become generic. You know, it's sort of been there,
yeah,
done that quality. So I don't know why Warner Brothers didn't try to do something at least a little different with the premise anyway to bring people on.
They probably should have moved it back a little. Don't take on Thor. Don't take on Star Wars. Maybe at least, you know, and I love Black Panther, and I'm looking forward to the movie, but at least maybe take Black Panther on if you're going to move close to some Marvel movie. But, you know, not those two.
You'd like to see him? I think I mentioned this to you last time we talked. I'd really like to see him kind of fight a supervillain team I mean, the closest we've actually had to that in a movie of any sort was Civil War, and those weren't super villains. It was kind of like superheroes slap fighting with one another, and you'd really like to see them go up against an evil squad of supervillains. It really challenges them, and, you know, why not? I mean, what's so hard about that?
I mean, as you know, I'm generally, as I think you are, a big fan of what the Marvel Universe has done in a lot of instances with their movies. But my biggest critique is the lack of cultivating villains. They've done a marvelous job over, 15 films cultivating their heroes. But you left out one of the key elements to superheroes, and that's villains. Now, again, not entirely. They would argue, oh, we've got a couple of them. Yeah, but you're so lopsided. I mean, Loki. Okay, you've got Loki. Granted,
but he's an anti-hero,
right? It's not, exactly. But I'm just saying they would. I'm just trying, he's still a villain, and he's still intended to be like a. You get Red Skull, but you only use him once. You set up in the Incredible Hulk movie. You set up the leader, but you don't use him.
Right.
Let's see here. Ultron, fair enough, a top Avengers villain at least.
But Ultron sort of speaks to the problem that they've had all along, which is. They set up one central villain and a bunch of minions.
They should have spent time working on. I mean, again, the team. You don't need super teams to fight one. Usually, one villain. That super teams were for the times when Spidey can't go handle the guy himself, or in Batman or whoever. You need gangs of. A gang of superheroes usually creates a gang of supervillains.
Right. And vice versa.
And I won't. I'd be spoiler if I mentioned anything more about that. But to just put it like this, the Avengers fights. They all teamed up originally in their very first comic, just like in their first movie, to fight Loki because he's pretty powerful. He's a god and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
After that, their comic, they always fought. The big stuff, just like the Fantastic Four. They fight the big things. So. Yeah, it's just I don't know. I understand you only have so much time in movies, but you're right. You could have done it. They could have done way better in introducing villains.
Yes, and they need to do that, I think, going forward. And another thing, another peeve is that oftentimes in the solo movies, they wind up fighting a villain who's more or less a reflection of the hero.
Yeah,
what I mean. Iron Man will fight Iron Monger. As excellent as the movie as it was, Captain America fights because sort of his someone who is like him in Winter Soldier. Black Panther looks like his chief opponent is going to be another guy in a Black Panther suit.
He is based on a Black Panther villain, though. Yeah.
Right. I'm not saying that that's not accurate to the comics. I'm saying that. This is another one of those cases where the heroes often seem to line up against somebody who is like them, just a villain. And there's a little bit of you want to see something a little different there. You want to see them fight somebody who's maybe against type. For example, if you had. Someone who is based on technology like Iron Man, he might face somebody who uses magical powers, and then he would be like, well, what the hell do I do? Because I'm a science guy, I don't know how to face that, just kind of shake things up a little bit so that it doesn't feel like it just ultimately boils down to a slugfest.
Yep. And the thing is, and if it is a slugfest, it's better than a slugfest between a couple of powerful villain versus hero than a bunch of army of, let's see.
Easily
Skrulls,
dispatched minions?
Right. Skrulls, robots, and now parademons, anyway, it's a problem. But, yeah, the Jatari were pretty much Skrulls, so yeah.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, on to, speaking of villains, we have some football teams. That were villains last week.
Yes.
And we'll start that with your worst nemesis. As a matter of fact, I did not get to see much of that game, the Green Bay Packers at the Chicago Bears. But I was a little bit surprised by how that one turned out. Sorry of the way it did turn out, by the way. Mm-hmm. What happened in that game, man? Let's taking a little look back at Week 10 for the Saints and Bears.
Yeah, looking back on that game in particular, it was just embarrassing. I mean, the Bears are going to be offensively limited. We have covered that before. The quarterback's position is still evolving. They have had some trouble fielding some pro quality wide receivers. The running game has been not as effective lately as it was early on. It's a little easier to shut that down when you know you can stack the box as often as defenses do. But the Bears, the only way to describe it really is they laid a big egg because they had some defensive lapses that allowed Green Bay. Green Bay did not really do that thing where they just have sustained drives and then punch it in. And, you're like, wow, damn, how do we stop that? I mean, we stopped them plenty of times, but the problem was that at key points, they would get a crucial conversion or a crucial big play. And it was often because of a defensive lapse, like somebody freelancing or somebody not getting the communication that, hey, I'm going to run a stunt inside, so you take outside contain, that kind of thing. And the result was, even though it was within a touchdown, it was a really, really – it was a game that was there for the taking if everybody, I think, had kind of just had stayed within their assignments and had, the assignment signed football, as they say. And, yeah. Even in a couple of cases where there were lapses in coverage, that's going to happen from time to time. But, in the case of there was one long touchdown run, in another case where they had them in a third and kind of a long situation, and they lost the outside contains of the quarterback, who is not known for his mobility, was able to scramble for not just a first down, but a big chunk. And it was plays like that basically decided the outcome ultimately. And, it was uncharacteristic, particularly of the defense. The offense, I've got to say, Trubisky is progressing. You can see the growth, because he had he was within, I think, 4 yards of a 300-yard game. And he was, just really you could start to see the signs that this kid can be something special. Not he will be, but that he can maybe be. But at the same time, when your offense is still kind of two-dimensional at best, you're going to have your issues. But they were still in it. And in fact, the thing that might have decided the game ultimately, and you may or may not have seen anything about this on replays or whatever, but mm-hmm. There was a play that was challenged where the Chicago running back, Benny Cunningham, had the ball. He was running toward the end zone. He's getting tackled just short of the pylon, so he reaches out. And mm-hmm. as he's reaching the ball toward the pylon, he kind of lets go of the ball. Mm-hmm. And the ball touches the pylon. And so, tragically, the correct call is that it's a touchback and it's Green Bay's ball on the 20.
I saw that.
Yeah, but the only thing is, it actually, he was initially ruled down at, I think, about the 1 or the 2 yard line, because uh-huh. it looked like his toe had touched. And
okay.
the reality is that they're talking about the replay standard where you only overturn a call if there is convincing evidence to do so, overwhelming evidence. And it still looked a lot like his toe was on the chalk at about the 2 yard line before he lost control of the ball. So the Bears actually should have lost that challenge and had the ball on the 2 yard line. But as per usual, second week in a row,
wow.
the refs do what they do, or I should say, the replay people in New York, who I think are the ones ultimately who make the call on replays. So, what could have been 7 points, turned out to be Green Bay's ball going the other way.
Jeez.
So that was really, disappointing. But, the bottom line is that sometimes you kind of feel like in a game like that, it really shouldn't have even been competitive. And it was a case where Green Bay kind of desperately needed a win, and the Bears came out for whatever reason, as they often do at home anymore. The home field just isn't an advantage for them, period. They just came out flat. And so the combination of the two allowed Green Bay to escape with a victory when the Bears, like I said, you know, it was a game that was there for the taking. And so, you know, needless to say, the fan base is really discouraged and demoralized right now. It just feels like it's you know, one step forward and two steps back. Constantly, and I understand that that's a characteristic of rebuilding teams sometimes, but you know, at some point you wish that you could see things moving more forward than backwards. You know,
right?
You're starting to make that progress and break out of your shell and get there. And it was you know, it was a tough game to take on that basis, but hey, you know, it's not like I haven't had six other games like it or worse this season, and I've only had the pleasure of three victories. So it's just one of those years, man. That's the summary.
Damn, up and down, man. Well, I'm sorry about it, Bonus.
Yeah, it's all right.
I was tough to see it, man, but I still believe better days are ahead. I really do, I think. But you're right. When you're rebuilding, you're going to have the you're going to have those good days, and then you're going to see a setback here that'll dumb you out a little bit. Then you'll see some good stuff again.
Right.
Yes, yeah, just that is. You're right. That's the rebuilding. That's rebuilding in the NFL and probably every sport. So
yeah.
Hang in there. I think there's probably going to be a lot more good than bad coming your way.
Hey, I'm wired to hang in there. So you know that's not an option. I'm not some fair weather bandwagon fan who just. You know, decides, oh, well, I'll just not pay attention to the Bears until they're good again. No, I suffer with them and I celebrate with them. So that's just how it goes.
Well, there you go. And you're going to enjoy it better than any of those fan bags. When they finally give them that track that you want them, you're going to enjoy it a hell of a lot more than the bandwagoners do.
That's the damn truth.
Trust me on that one. I, as you know, before last week, I was, you know, obviously happy but skeptical. It's still, I'm not saying I'm not still skeptical, but I was cautiously optimistic that we're definitely on, that the Saints are definitely on the right track themselves. You know, when you're obviously at that point 6-2 and leading in the division, what's not to like, right? I mean,
right. And then
however,
you go out, kill the Bills and you force them to bench their quarterback for this week. I mean,
that was, because that was unlike any Saints game I've seen in the past 10 years.
Wow.
And it was a thing of beauty. And the reason why it was a thing of beauty for me is, let's see, 6 rushing touchdowns, 300 yards on the ground, and your quarterback, you know, basically only throws for 185 yards. When you know what he can do and he now no longer has to carry the team, that was huge. And, of course, a defense that doesn't allow anything until a garbage touchdown at the end by the mighty whatever Peterson guy, backup something Peterson or whatever, that, you know, after they've already ruined the quarterback's day.
Nathan
so
Peterson.
There was, there you go. The great Nathan Peterson.
And you know why I know that? Because a comic artist friend of mine is a Buffalo Bills fan, and he's been suffering Tyrod Taylor, and he's been praying that they would bench Tyrod, and he's getting his wish this week.
Well, and, you know, the guy scored more than Tyrod. It got led to more points than Tyrod did. It was just a complete and utter domination. Right. And I think anytime you don't have to put the football in the air that much, and you can score six touchdowns and hold during when the game is anywhere in question, hold the team to 3 points at home, a team that has not lost at home yet. I call that complete and utter domination. And it's exactly what it was. And you know, first of all, they had one drive that was 95 yards, dude. Oh, excuse me, 94 yards, no runs. I mean, excuse me, no passes. It was ten runs, and the technically speaking, when Drew Brees ran that one into the end zone to cap that drive off, it was a design pass. But still, he ran it in. So, And when Drew Brees is running him into the end zone, huh? And then that was extraordinary, okay? But then when we got into the later part of the late third quarter and I guess early fourth quarter, the thing that really struck me is that you go, okay, the drive like that's pretty cool, but you don't have to do that all day long, are you? And they had almost, I don't know, I should have counted. I didn't really count it, but something like 6, 7, 8, 9 consecutive plays where they were blasting through for 8, 9 yards a clip through the middle. I mean, blowing this. And again, it's not like these are holes like Mack trucks you can drive through. That's a pretty good defense. But these are holes blasted open just enough to where really fast backs can get in there and, you know, see the cuts to be made. And, of course, that is Mark Ingram was just sensational doing that. And when he wasn't doing it, Kamara was doing that. You had 200-yard rushers in a game. Ingram ran for 3 touchdowns. It's just but again, that last bit when we're watching, so let's just get this game over with and get out of there. We got to take it. They're blasting through for almost 10 yards a pop every run. I'm like, that. I've seen that out of other teams once in a while, and even other teams not that often. But from the Saints, the New Orleans Saints? No, it just doesn't happen, man. And it was beautiful. And the only drawback to that, dude, is it got to be still a lot of time on the clock, and you got a 30-something point ball game, and you just want to go home. And running the ball is usually your answer to run a clock out, but you're like, we've already beaten these backs up pretty good. We need to start giving this to some guys who aren't, you know, get our starters out of there.
Right.
And they got Ingram and Kamara out of there at some point later in the game. What happened is they get this kid, God, I can't remember his name now, bust one for a 30-yard touchdown run to boot for good measure. Then he got this other running back. It got so bad, like, look, a fullback. So we're down to, like, our 2-star running backs, one running back and one fullback. So we went out and got when you've got almost a half a quarter to go and you don't want to beat your backs up anymore, you need some nobodies to come in there and just run the clock out. So we went and picked up a back this week because I was thinking that during that game, that fourth quarter, I'm like, you know, I don't want these guys in there, but who's going to run the football if we don't? We got to run the clock out.
Right.
So we needed to add somebody. So they went and picked up some new back. So I'm like, good, because if we get in that situation again, I want to get these guys off the field. If you don't want to, you know, wear and tear on these guys going into December, maybe you're going to have to throw it a little bit just to take some pressure off of them. And we'll see what happens, you know, with the Redskins tomorrow on that. But that was, again, outdoors, too. Outdoors on the road. Not bad weather, but certainly a little slippery out there. And, again, so much of this Dome team went out there dominating this. It was beautiful, man. And I guess it was so beautiful because I can't tell you, man, how many years I've been screaming at the screen, please run the fucking football.
Right.
Just a little. Come on, man, how about a run every now and then, just for old time's sake? Remember what that – let's just run one once in a while. You know, because, yes, you might think it's entertaining to watch your quarterback throw the football 55 times, but that means if you could score 6 touchdowns and you might not win. Having to win a fucking shootout every week can get it really old, no matter how much fun it might be. Now, again, if you're not a fan of either team and you switched on to that 2015 Saints-Giants game where – Drew Brees had to throw 7 fucking touchdown passes to win that game.
Right.
It looked like 7-on-7 drills. It was against the Giants in the Dome. Eli threw for 6. Crazy. You're not going to the Super Bowl having to throw the football that much. I'm sorry. You're not going anywhere, really. You're not going to win. And those years when he was doing all that throwing, we were 7-9, 8-8. You know, the year of the Super Bowl, we had a very good balanced running game and a defense that was taking the football away. We took the ball away a little bit last week. We had, you know, in later years, a couple other times we got to the playoffs after that, we won 11 games, won 10 games. We had halfway decent running games, at least, that we used a little bit. Every other time, when Drew's throwing for 5,000 yards at a clip of the year season, we're, you know, win 9 games, win 8 games, win 7 games a few times. Eventually you do the math, folks, and go, hey, if you can pound it like this and play that kind of defense, right, even on the road, you're gonna win a lot of road games and you should win almost everything at home. And I think they're gonna be really tough to beat at home. And if they find some way to capture home field, which is tough. But you don't know, the Eagles might start having some problems. We don't know, but the chances are it's the Eagles' game to lose right now. But now I'm finally to the point where I'm again not talking about the Super Bowl. I'm just saying we are a definite playoff contender and definitely a definite Super Bowl contender now, because they've got, at least right now, you never know what you're going to lose personnel wise or anything else. At least right now, they've got all the elements in place that are to do it like they did it last time. We'll see what happens. But now I'm at the point where I believe this team can hang on to this division. We'll see.
Well, just based on everything that I have seen, mostly highlights, although I did check in on the game a few times, they are looking an awful lot like the real deal. I mean, sometimes I've seen that and my eyes have deceived me and the team has just been a mirage, but this just does not feel like a mirage. It feels like it's going to be a very good year for the Saints. I don't know what the back half of your schedule is like in terms of quality teams that you might play and sort of test yourself against. But, the Bills are still a 5-4 team. Like you said, they were undefeated at home going into that game. And, it wasn't even close. It was just a total blowout. And so I guess the only real test I would wonder about is if they've got anybody left on the schedule that sports an above average to good quarterback. And, because that's going to basically make the difference in terms and of course wide receivers, because that's going to show you where your defense is pretty convincingly. But thus far they haven't had that much trouble, so
and it's funny you mention that, because it's not an easy schedule. In my opinion, and I'm sure you'll agree, this is not an easy schedule. You got tomorrow the Redskins. They're desperate. Kirk Cousins is not, there's nobody's, I mean, he's a pretty good quarterback, so
yeah,
that's a tough one. But it's at the Dome. At least we got to go at the Rams. We know they're red hot.
Yeah.
Host the Panthers. We never know what you're going to get out of them.
Yeah, division game, and the Panthers have been playing pretty well lately.
At the Falcons, you know what a Saints-Falcons game is like.
Oh, yeah.
Who knows? we'll have the Jets in the Dome. There's no way you should lose that one.
No.
Let me just be honest. Then the Falcons back in the Dome. We won't know what's on the line at that point.
Yeah, exactly.
But still, it's Saints-Falcons, so who knows? And then the last game, Saints at Bucks, again, it may be all wrapped up by then. We may need to win to get a higher seed. If so, if we need that game, I'm not too worried about it, the Saints at Bucks. So, but
right.
That said, there's none of it's easy. None of them.
Nope.
Nothing easy right there, especially when, you're going to get everybody's best game, And every one of these teams that we're playing is definitely also playing for positioning, and there's none of them, with the exception probably of the Bucks. I don't even think they're eliminated. They're not even eliminated yet, and the Jets aren't even eliminated yet. So, yeah. Now, by the time we play the Jets, they'll probably be eliminated.
Right.
I don't know, but oh man. But again, it's just all I'm saying is it's the first time, because of a lot of stuff that we don't get into here on the show, that I've been really excited. But I've been enjoying. Don't get me wrong, I've enjoyed winning the games we've won and all that kind of stuff. It's the first time where I'm going, because I always believe in being a football realist. If my team sucks, I'm going to tell you they suck. I don't like the homers. The people who go,
right,
you can't say my team sucks. Look, dude, if your team is 2-12, they suck,
mm-hmm.
And you should be able to admit it to yourself. If your team's no good, you and I do it all the time. If our team is playing like garbage, we say it.
Yes.
You should be able to say it. I mean, it's not, doesn't mean you don't love them. It just, or you're not a fan. It doesn't mean that. It
right.
just means you're a realist. You're like, yeah, we're playing like dog shit. No kidding, we suck. Really, you think? Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So I don't get into that rah-rah crap about stuff like that. You got to go to the other, you all also have to give them their due when they are doing very well. And go, yeah, no, right now, we're a good football team with a lot of potential for the future of this season. We'll know a lot more in January. December. December
right.
is the crucial. It's the key month. If you survive into December, you never know. So, but
that
it was good.
Right.
I was this year, at this time last year, we had no optimism. And the year before, and the couple few years before that, Mike, none, you know.
Right.
That was, it'd be nice if we could make the playoffs. Well, I don't think so. We're in second place. We're in third place. We're 500, you know, who knows. If we got close to sniffing, like, oh, you know, beating, getting over 500, we were like, whoa, that was pretty good. So, and yet, we've been spoiled because we've had Drew Brees. So, in the years when we were losing, we still had a guy that would get up there and give you some entertainment. He would light it up. And that was kind of, I mean, look, and if you're not gonna win a championship every year, but if you got a guy that you can at least kind of root for to really be a fan of, the one, you know, lighting it up, that is kind of fun that we've had that quarterback to enjoy in a bunch of years where he's carrying the team on his shoulders and just, it's a lot of fun, but it's not going to win you anything.
Right.
It'll bring you some joy. You'll be happy for him that he's solidifying himself in NFL history as one of the greats. He gave you one Super Bowl, and you're kind of like, he gave us the one. What are we going to do? But you also, look, the one spent, nothing will top the one, but you still want, you always want the next one. You know, you always want the next
absolutely.
One. I mean, look, after we got that, I actually thought, you know, when we got that one that I didn't think I was going to live long enough to see happen, the next year I was a little worried, Michael, going into that season, because I was like, I wonder if, I don't know, am I, now that that's happened, will this season be, I mean, is it going to be anticlimactic? Is it going to be something like, if they won it again, would I feel the same way? And I think a lot of them will tell you, no, like players who win it, you know, win the championship will go, no, you're not going to feel the same way, but you're going to be pretty good. You're going to love having that one. You're going to love everyone. Look at Tom Brady. You think people would say, look, dude, don't you have enough? You've been seven times. You have five of them. You know, you're going to try to fill the other hand now.
Right.
But he wants to. So, you know, hell, apparently he doesn't get enough of it. So, as a fan, I think you think that way till the kickoff of the following season. You go, come on, let's get another one. And then, of course, we played like we did after that. So we had that really wretched, you know, Super Bowl after Super Bowl season. You know?
Yeah.
So, but you always want it as a fan. And I'm very proud of these guys for look, I fully admit I've been one of these guys calling for Mickey Loomis and Sean Payton's heads. I wanted them gone. I'm not too proud to admit it, and I think I had a lot, and I still stand by what I said at those times because it looked like they weren't learning their lesson. Now something's happened. I don't know what it is, but maybe they finally listened. Maybe they did learn their lesson. Maybe they learned, look, dude, you know, we can't put this on one guy all the time. He's 38 years old. We've got to start. Well, maybe we need to start looking back at some of the things we did when we were successful.
Right.
And, you know, and maybe we need to stop having a terrible defense. We need to start putting a defense together. And I'm going, and you know, Michael, maybe you could tell me why. Why are now all of a sudden? Because here's one thing we've noticed this year. And if you, there are times like, you know, a team will throw a pass on us and from whatever, you know, obviously some kind of busted zone or a screwed up coverage will get them about 12 yards down the field, and then a couple jukes, and all of a sudden they're just gone for a touchdown in the old days. Now we're tackling them.
Right.
Now, even if we have blown coverage, now even if a guy does scoot through a zone, or if a guy jukes someone, there's always – we're not giving up the big, big, big plays. Like, again, if a guy gets an 10-yard chunk once in a while, now – the next play, we probably stop him and drop him for yards, where before the guy got an 8, 10-yard pass on you, he'd either do one or two things. He'd get away and make it a big, longer gain, or on the next play, they'd get another big chunk, and we would not tackle. We were not tackling people.
Right.
Now, we're still – dude, I'm astonished every time we make a tackle now. Because of years of not tackling, I'm still going – we were talking about this last week. Like, whoa, like, because there were a couple times, obviously, with Tyrod. I mean, with Taylor, maybe the week before, whoever we're playing, you know, you know, the Bears or whoever got a decent gain on us, right? And you go, that went for a couple yards. But then we think, you know what? Last year, that guy would have checked that sucker for like 30 yards.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, that would have been a 15-yard gain, that little 6-yard run there that we're aggravated about, that the guy got 6 up the middle on us. That could have been 12, 15 yards in last year.
Right.
They're tackling. And for years, I can't tell you how many times we're watching a game going, I'm like, look, I'm no expert or anything, but I think you're supposed to tackle people.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't get why you motherfuckers can't tackle. couple of years ago, Brandon Browner came in here. He's a thief, by the way. He should be put in jail for stealing money. This guy would stand around in the end zone. And I was going, you know what? They could pay me $10 million to stand in the end zone and watch football.
Right.
This guy was a spectator with a uniform. Standing out there, couldn't cover a shit. And I cannot tell you how many times I watched him standing there watching plays in front of him.
Right.
And he was just the worst of it. And guys who can't tackle, guys who bounce off of people, guys who can't wrap up on a tackle, anything. But then I would watch like other teams and go, wow, I'm glad. And I would say stuff like, wow, it must be nice to have a team that tackles people when they catch the football or when they run it out of the backfield. I'd watch your Bears and go, you know, the Bears can tackle. Why can't the Saints tackle? I don't get this. It's pretty basic stuff. I mean, I played football as a kid. They taught you how to fucking tackle. That guy's making $30 million. What is that?
Right.
That quarterback or that linebacker's making millions of dollars, and he cannot tackle my aunt or whoever old lady I can think of.
Right,
why?
Right.
I don't get it, man.
Did the Seahawks recently re-sign Brandon Browner?
Oh, did they really?
They re-signed a guy who used to play for them at defensive back, and I'm trying to remember who that was. But I mean, yeah, I remember, you know, Browner was coming out of the Seahawks and part of the Legion of Boom and all that good stuff.
Yes.
And, you know, it looked like a really good pickup, you know, and then all season long, I hear about how how Browner's just basically drawing a paycheck, basically. He's not doing a damn thing. And it was just I just expected a heck of a lot more out of a high-profile signing like that. Byron Maxwell. Re-signed Byron Maxwell. I guess I don't even know if Brandon Browner's in the league anymore.
I think he's in jail for stealing from the Saints.
Yeah, exactly. if only you could have like some sort of conviction for some guy who comes in and scams your team and then, you know, makes off with the money like a guy holding bags of money running out of a bank.
Look, I'm telling you, Belichick knows how to snooker other teams. And he's such good friends with Sean Payton. Dude, he has snookered Sean Payton so many times into taking players that, you know, Payton will give – he'll get a good player from us, like Brandon Cooks, and we'll end up with some fucking ex-Patriots guy like, well, look, he played for Belichick. He must be good. No, that was part of a scheme, dude. He played for the Patriots and got a Super Bowl. Why do you think the Patriots dumped him on the Seahawks?
Right.
Which he did. I think Parcells dumped him on them, right? Or was it the other way around, maybe?
No, it was
Parcells. He played for the Patriots before that.
Let's see. Okay, who are we talking about again?
Browner.
You know, I am not entirely certain. I remember the wide receiver that they traded back and forth. You're right. A guy who really excels in the Patriots system will get foisted off on some other team for a draft pick or something, and then he doesn't do anywhere near as well, and then he goes back to the Patriots and if he's not quite the same player, he's still good enough that they know how to get the most out of him. And you know, it's just one of those things where sometimes the difference in aptitude, personnel aptitude between certain teams is almost criminal, the way they're able to, like you say, snooker other teams and get their picks and players and stuff in return. It's just nuts how that works out sometimes.
Yep. He's good at that, though. Hey, Sean, old buddy, let me get this player from you. I'll give you a couple of my, you know, cast-offs.
Right.
Anyway. Oh, well. So, again,
I'm glad that after trading Brandon Cooks, you guys still are fielding a top offense because, you know, I know he was an ascending player when
yeah,
they
he
dealt
was good.
Him. Yeah.
He was, now he's a, again, sometimes somebody's good, but they're also their locker room problems, and he was a crybaby.
Mm.
Yeah, so that's, of course, again, if he went to Belichick, though, that means Belichick said, look, hey, look, the shit you pulled up, you got away with Sean Payton? No, you're going to come here, you can play football, or you can go away.
Right.
That's it. And he really hasn't played that well. He hasn't had a good season yet, really, even though they're winning. So he'll probably be gone a year or two. They don't need him. They got Edelman and Amendola and Gronk.
Yes.
So, yeah, they don't really need him.
Catch ball.
Gronk run.
Gronk
I wonder if he's ever going to kick Chris Rose's ass for that.
well,
Dooner,
it fits. Mm-hmm. He's
yes.
got that sort of caveman look anyway.
He does. I'm sure. Hopefully he's not offended. So.
Oh, wow.
Let's see here.
Gronk, if you're listening to the show, we actually do love you. Don't hurt us, please.
He does. He does actually listen. So, Gronk, look, dude, fuck you. Gronk, Michael made me say that. And I
yeah,
can use his address. I've got his address you can have, and you can go take it up with him.
There you go.
Okay. This week, let's take a little bit of a look ahead toward tomorrow's games. Your Chicago Bears will play host again this week. They'll be at home at Soldier Field to the Detroit Lions. What do you think? What you thinking about this one?
I'm just thinking that, the percentages definitely favor picking against the Bears every game for the remainder of this season, with the exception of I think they play, if I'm not mistaken, the Browns and the 49ers. I mean, there are a couple of games on that schedule where, you know, you want to talk about, you know, a couple of special needs kids flailing away at one another. It's got that kind of feel to it, you know. And I'm not saying the Bears will win those games, because if I'm those teams, I'm looking at that game on the schedule and I'm thinking, hey, this might be the place where we pick up our first win or our second win. You know, it's definitely not a case where we have any reason to feel confident against anybody. I mean, especially since, 49ers, we do play them in a couple of weeks. First of all, we face the Lions, and then we get to dispatch the Eagles and send them away crying because they're such a lousy team this year, you know. But, I was genuinely optimistic looking at the second half of the schedule, because it started with a very beatable Packers team, whom we did not beat. The Lions, divisional rival, the Lions are not world beaters. You think you can maybe split with them. They've got the 49ers and the Bengals and the Browns, and those are eminently winnable games.
Right.
And then you've got the Vikings to finish it off, and the Vikings have been sort of in a weird place as far as quarterback goes, but they're still stringing wins together. So, you know, it's not like you necessarily expect to beat them. But we have beaten them because, again, when it's a divisional opponent, you know, you never know exactly what to expect.
Right.
But, you know, you were just kind of thinking, well, you know, we hung in there against a tough first half schedule, managed to get a few wins, and maybe if we can flip the script and win more than we lose, we can, you know, maybe get like an 8-8 or 9-7 type of thing. If we get really lucky, maybe even 10-6. Now, I see two or three probable wins that'll put us maybe at 6-10. And that's only because you're kind of playing the law of averages where, you know, you're thinking, well, there are a number of teams that are probably about as bad or worse than yours, and you should at least get a few wins against them. We have the Lions tomorrow, and, I know we're not quite into the picks segment yet, but I'm only telling you that I'm not optimistic about it. Stafford is a streaky quarterback, but he does play well against the Bears. In fact, it's funny, you could argue he's been a little better since they lost Megatron, which, you know, I don't blame him for leaving because the Lions really just aren't going to be contenders anytime soon. I kind of hope he comes back after a couple of years of resting up and healing so that he will present a cap problem for the Lions and they'll have to deal him to somebody and maybe he'll have a chance, you know, he'll have a chance to, you know, like win a few games with another team. But, you know, he's had to become a little bit more, you know, less reliant on Calvin Johnson. And so that's helped him a bit, but at the same time, he's in one play, he'll throw an absolute laser to a guy or throw a ball into a tight spot where, you know, it requires an elite throw and an elite arm. And then some other cases, he'll just throw these inexplicable wounded ducks. And you're like, what in the hell was that? And it's not like he was hit while throwing or under pressure. It's just a bad pass, you know?
Yeah,
Stafford is just an odd quarterback. That's all you can really say in terms of his consistency. But, you know, be that as it may, you'd like to see him win at home. I mean, that would be really swell. But, you know, I'm not really optimistic about what they may or may not do at any point. So, you know. So are we in the pick segment yet or not?
Not yet.
Okay.
Yet. We're just talking about tomorrow's games.
Because I know
you've
got the Skins tomorrow and,
You
know, the Skins laid an egg last week. So, and you guys were just brilliant. That's all you can say last week. So, especially being in the dome, you know, it's like you said, Cousins can be a very good quarterback when he's on, sometimes he's a little streaky. But, you know, this is a game the Saints, I you know, not trying to jinx them or anything like that. I just look at this as a game the Saints should win and possibly win going away. So I guess we'll just have to see what happens. But, you know, I like their chances a lot.
I think the skin jobs, they're up against the wall big time. So we're likely to get a little spirit out of them. But I think we should definitely like it. I think we should definitely be able to control the football in our own environs, be very loud, run the ball a lot again. But you can't get too hooked up. Even as much as I'm loving this running game thing now, I think I might actually mix it up a little bit, you know, really too predictable, let Drew come out there and maybe fling it around a little bit. You know, because his as he walks onto a field, his passing ability and the things he can do makes defensive coordinators take note, and it makes them have to prepare for that. So now I don't think they're all going to go out there going, look, Drew Brees doesn't throw the football anymore. Let's just get ready. Let's just stack the line of scrimmage. Let's put eight in the box, and we'll dare Drew Brees to beat us down the field in man cover. I don't think so.
Right.
Which is why people are having so much trouble stopping. So I think you'll see maybe the Saints not run as much as they did last week. I think they'll run a lot. I hope so. But also, you know, every now and then kind of just, you know, have a couple of drives that are a lot of passing just to throw the Redskins off balance, make this, you know, not know what to do, what we're going to do next. Cause you don't want to be predictable either. You know, you do want to stir it up. And you also want to show about, hey, look, everyone, we're serving notice to the league right now. We are a running team right now, but we can still do it like we did in the old days. So you got to watch out for that too.
Absolutely.
And that said, I think they might beat up – the way we're really getting to the passers now, Cam George has been amazing. They might beat up Cousins a good bit back there. I think if I'm remembering correctly, I think the Redskins have had a little bit of trouble protecting him. So
– Yeah. One of the things that also helps a running game too, and I don't know if you can comment on this because I'm frequently, you know, the TV shot that we're given, the camera angle is not always conducive to telling this. And sometimes you only get it if they point it out on a replay.
Right.
But frequently, one of the things that makes the difference between, a run for a few yards and a run for a lot more is the willingness of receivers to block downfield.
Yes.
That is one thing that if you're getting a lot of those kinds of runs, you're getting runs into the second level of the defense frequently. The offensive linemen are passing off their blocks properly and then getting their hands on the linebackers, and the wide receivers are blocking the defensive backs. so that, you know, and sometimes all they have to do is get in the way, but a lot of wide receivers really relish that chance to get their hands on a defensive back and push them around. So, if you're getting a lot of good runs and they're getting into the second and third level, then oftentimes you can credit the wide receivers for being coached up to be willing blockers downfield. So, that may be contributing. And, you know, have you seen a lot of that?
I'm glad you mentioned it because I kind of forgotten. I was thinking a lot about that during last week's game and that I would even talk about it tonight. And then, of course, you know, my memory's stupid. But absolutely. First of all, the offensive line was, again, I was, again, remiss because, you know, I go too fast. I don't write things down that I should talk about. I was remiss in not mentioning them more because there were points where they were just blasting some super holes open. Yes, the backs were hitting those holes quickly, but it's an outstanding job of run blocking by the offensive line. They've been excellent protecting Drew when they needed to as well. But I noticed that they have definitely changed blocking schemes of the wide receivers downfield in this year, where many years I can tell you the receivers weren't doing that, what you just talked about. And this year they are. They're hitting, getting down there, and they're jamming. Instead of getting jammed like they get jammed on pass plays, they've been going out and just really hitting those defensive backs in the backfield.
Right.
Like you just said, they were coached up to do it. This is definitely not. It's definitely something that is helping the running game immensely. That and having two really talented running backs. So good on you for calling that out. This is a team that is definitely blocking downfield with the wide receivers better than they ever have. Look at Matthew. Hey, Matt. He just popped in to say hi. Yeah, we are having a great show, Matthew. We decided we didn't even talk about football at all tonight. We just talked about Justice League and how it's the greatest movie ever made. Just kidding. We're talking about football. Now we've heard that. Yeah, because I don't think he's seen it yet. Dear, oh, dear. But we'll be reviewing Justice League Tuesday night, Matthew. So if you haven't seen it yet, Flash, if he hasn't seen it yet, and if Michael hasn't seen it yet, Matt, you can just fill in and did like you did last time. You can review a movie without seeing it like you did once before. He did a review with me one night without seeing the movie.
Oh, well, that's always a useful thing. I like that skill because it allows me to make shit up.
That was the night Guardians of the Galaxy 2. I reviewed that by myself, so he joined me and he reviewed it with me. So he did a damn fine job.
The bit where Superman returns at the end, but he's evil, and he uses his heat vision to just saw the world in half, and everything explodes. I mean, I wasn't expecting that personally. I don't know how they're going to follow up.
What did I tell you about spoiling?
Exactly.
Oh, dear. So, anyway, but again, good to see you there, Matthew. As always, bro, go Pens. Hope you're doing good, buddy, and hope to talk to you soon, man. But back on it for tomorrow night. Tomorrow, I hope both of our teams can pull it off. We'll get to our pick segment in a second. But, yeah, I think we go out there and play our style of ball. I think we've definitely got a chance. And if the Bears get out there and play their kind of defense and get Trubisky out there. And, hey, look, you can beat the Lions. You know them very well. And, you know, didn't I see something where am I wrong, or did I hear some commentator say that Stafford doesn't do well in Chicago, or am I thinking somewhere else?
He is a guy who's used to playing in a dome, so he has had his bad share of bad games at Soldier Field, but like a lot of the series with our NFC North rivals, they've got the edge on us as far as the recent series are concerned. So the whole thing is the Bears just have to start putting it together. That's the key. The Lions are they've got more veteran players. They've got more continuity. They aren't breaking in a new quarterback. So they've got the decided edge. You know, they've got the talent to compete with most teams, even though they don't always put it together. They're a little bit intermittent, weird about that. But just in terms of, I would say, team chemistry, they've definitely got the advantage as opposed to, the Bears, who are breaking in a whole bunch of new players and, young guys who've only been on the team for a couple of seasons, and they're you know, they're high on their upside, but they have to eventually prove that they can play consistently. So you know, of course, Detroit's only 5-4, so it's not like we're playing a team that everybody's talking about as being, you know, in the if not the playoff conversation, you know, or you know, the Super Bowl conversation. I mean, I don't think anybody expects to see the Lions in the NFC Championship game, you know, come late December or January. I guess the NFL playoffs these days are January pretty much now. You know, there's still a talented team, especially on offense. They've got a pretty good pass rush. If the Bears are going to have any chance, they're going to have to rectify their woes in the rushing game and be able to run the ball on them. It goes without saying that the Bears' defense is going to have to play better than it did against the Packers, because when you let, you know, you don't that the rum-dum backup that they're playing right now, Brett Hundley. I mean, he's nothing special. He will never be anything special. He does not show after 3 years in the league, mostly backing up Aaron Rodgers, that, you know, he's going to, you know, be anybody's first choice to, you know, like trade a draft pick for a possible starter. You know, when people were casting around for possible starters, they were looking at AJ, you know, what's his name from the Bengals, AJ McCarron. They were looking at Jimmy Garoppolo. You know, there are guys like that who seem to have that kind of upside. Nobody is looking at Brett Hundley that way, and we just made him look much better than we should have, and it was mostly due, like I said, to some key defensive breakdowns. And they played more mistake-free ball than we did. That's, you know, really the upshot of it. And the Bears defense is going to have to get back on track. Kyle Fuller, in particular, in coverage, is going to have to show the consistency he was showing early in the season that he did not show in that game, because he gave up a couple of crucial long passes, and it was horrifying to watch, because you're like, no, you've been looking so good. Why are you doing this now? So they're going to have to get back on the wagon and play well. And yeah, if they do that, you know, then at the very least it'll be close. You know, with a guy like Trubisky, who is not going to be, you know, dominating right now, because, you know, he's just still acclimating to the program, and his wide receivers are a mixed bag, to say the least. That's a charitable description, a mixed bag.
Right.
You know, they're not going to be running away with too many games. So the upshot is that he's just going to have to play game manager, not turn the ball over. The running game is going to have to be there. The defense is going to have to get back to its solid form. And if they can do that, then sure, you know, at worst it becomes a coin flip as to who wins. But if those attributes don't pan out, if they start turning the ball over, which, you know, is a possibility, if the defense has another lapse like it did against the Packers, then, you know, it'll probably be a, you know, 10 to 20 point difference in the score, and we will not be happy campers coming out of that game.
Here you go, man.
Yeah,
well,
so that's pretty much how I look at it, you know.
Well, best of luck on it, brother. Let's see, of course, the first game of the week we have already picked, and that was you winning with the Steelers, the Pittsburgh Steelers, and, of course, me losing. Me being a dumbass, bonehead, picking the Tennessee Titans, the Tennessee Tuxedos. So, let us go forward with our picks then. Tomorrow, let's see, the Jacksonville Jaguars at the Cleveland Brownnosers.
Well, I think the Jaguars are a pretty good team. I think they sport a lot of talent, even if the one of the positions that's not especially talented is the one named Bortles. I just love saying Bortles. What a name, you know.
Who doesn't love saying Bortles?
I tell you, it's almost like a cartoon character, mm-hmm, or like an Oompa Loompa or something from Willy Wonka. Bortles, you know. It's you could see a future, like a science fiction type property, where people, you know, just blurt out Bortles.
Bortles.
Or something, you know?
Yeah, yeah. We'll be, he'll have the last laugh on our asses when he's toting that gold jacket one day.
Yeah, you know, if that happens, then hey, we'll be the first ones to say, well, we weren't wrong. We just weren't right.
No. That'll exactly.
Be it. Yeah, so, but I think the Blake Bortles-led Jaguars will fairly easily dispatch the Cleveland Browns, the mistake by the lake, when they go into Cleveland. And, you know, of course, watch the Browns just light it up and get their first win of the season. But, nah, I don't think so. I got the Jaguars in their two-tone helmets.
I have picked the Jaguars all year just about and have done fairly well with them. But the Brown Nosers have got to clip somebody at some point. They're going to have to get lucky. And, you know, it's good.
Did you play the Bears?
Yeah, look, I respect I understand that, and I respect the Jags. But still, if the Brown Nosers are going to do that, it's going to be at home. Let's face it. If it's going to happen at all, it's probably going to be at home. And against a team that, while good, can be had, you know.
Sure.
So, yeah, I mean, certainly the Jags are good, but they've also slipped up a little bit here. And so I'm going to go with the Brown Nosers for no real good reason other than the fact that I'm so far behind anyway. I got to take a couple of shots happens, you know.
You know, if nothing else, the Browns should be happy because you have picked the Browns on at least a few occasions
this year.
When no one else was, so you have been showing them the love, you know. I think that's a noble thing, man.
Well, but it's also the law of averages say you got to win some point.
Yeah.
No one's gonna go 0-16 again. It's not gonna happen.
Keep pushing those chips in. Why not?
That's tougher to do than 16-0.
Yeah,
or right up there with it. So, well, that's Tampa Bay Buccaneers at the Miami Dolphins in a game that was pushed from the season opener.
Yes,
till this,
yes.
This week,
the hurricane kind of put a kibosh on that first tilt that they were going to have, and I've got the Dolphins. Dolphins aren't great. You know, it's a battle of a 3-6 team against a 4-5 team, but I dare say this is a game where the Bucs are reeling and not in a good way. At 3-6, I think that most teams that are 3-6 or worse at this point don't really have what you would call credible playoff aspirations.
No.
So I think that the Dolphins are a little bit closer in terms of having a shot, and they're at home. So I think the Dolphins have a bit more to play for. They're at home, and, you know, they're not a horrible team. They're just not a very good team. So I'm taking the Dolphins. I think we stuck a fork in the Bucks a while back anyway, but you never know. They might try to, you know, we've already stuck a fork in the Browns, and you picked them, so you never know.
You can still win with a fork in you.
Yes.
Yeah, but I agree with you definitely on the Dolphins. I'm also my pick. The quote, the Ravens nevermore at the Green Bay Packers.
Well, I don't think that I could be wrong, and everybody else could be wrong about the Packers. I think that the Packers win against the Bears was because they played the Bears, and I still think that overall they're a pretty bad team. Ravens, they're not great, but I think that they are especially good on defense, and that's going to be a problem for a Green Bay offense that outside of Aaron Rodgers is not clicking on all cylinders, basically. I think the Ravens win in Green Bay. That's where I'm going.
I'm going to go with you also. I'm going to go with you on that one, too. I'm going to take the road Ravens, whatever their flaws are going to be. I think – I don't think the Packers are consistent enough to, you know, win 2 weeks in a row, even though they're going to be at home. The Ravens are – that defense, I think, holds on a little bit for them. So, could go either way.
We'll call them the Road Raging Ravens.
The Road Ravens, yes, yes, yes. The Detroit Lions at the Da Bars.
Da Bars. Yeah, it's like I said, I don't have any faith at all right now in the Bears' ability to win football games. So I think last week, in fact, was the first week I picked them to win, and I was wrong. And there were three other times I didn't pick them to win where they did win, but I don't think anybody or very many people picked them to win those games because they beat the Steelers, they beat the Panthers, and I forget the other game they won, but it doesn't matter. Point is that until they start winning, it's easy to pick against them. Lions, winning team, they're still trying to win their division, still part of the playoff conversation, so I think the Lions win this one.
I'm going to go with the Chicago Bears. I think the defense is going to make a couple of plays. It'll be similar to that Carolina game that I got to see a little bit of when they took the ball away and kept Carolina out of the end zone a lot. I think they'll probably do that, probably keep the Lions completely out of the end zone and score on defense and find a way to win a squeaker right there.
It would be swell. So, I hope you were right.
Won't be pretty, probably, but I think they can do it. The Cleveland, Los Angeles, St. Louis, Los Angeles Rams.
So Rams
at the Minnesota Vikings.
You know, based on record, both of them being 7-2. I mean, it's a pretty good matchup. All things considered, and the Vikings can win this game because the Vikings, particularly, they've got a good pass rush defensively.
Yeah.
They're playing very well, and the game is at their house, so that's never nothing. You know, you've got a bunch of people yelling "Skol Vikings," and you know, you've got that horn going off, doo doo, and people in horned helmets, and it's just a chaotic atmosphere. But that said, the Rams are just really playing very good football right now. Jared Goff is, as some people have said, like Carson Wentz, he's in the MVP conversation. And weren't they drafted in the same year?
Yes, last year.
Yeah. So it's interesting that they're both maturing pretty much at the same time. Rams in recent years have always sported a good defense, and they now have a good, very good offense. And so, you know, when I think about the eventual NFC title picture, you know, basically three teams come to mind right now, and that's the Rams, the Eagles, and the Saints. And I got the Rams in this one. I think they're going to go in there, and they're going to win it.
I am going to agree with you, sir. Again, the Red Hot Rams. Now, again, my instincts really, really were kind of leaning towards the not so much because of anything that the Vikings are. I mean, you got to give Case Keenum a lot of credit. He's doing a very, very credible job, and they're still, you know, Mike Zimmer, defense there and everything of the Vikings, and they're at home. You figured the Rams can't, and the big question mark is, can the Rams keep it up?
Right.
That's the big, how long will they be red hot? So a lot of that made me almost go Vikings, but I think they might stay hot for another week or at least get out of there with a win. They're good. We'll see, because this is when it starts getting tough, and we'll see how tough they are. I think I'm going to pick them, but it could go either way. Pick them, though.
I agree.
The Arizona Cardinals at the Houston Texans.
I am pretty much of a mind that the Texans, after they lost Deshaun, they've lost several straight, and they just seem to be in a tailspin.
Yep.
And the Cardinals, meanwhile, they've been a little up and down, but since they added Peterson, they've looked a bit better. And I slightly favor the Cardinals to go into Houston and take advantage of the Texans not really having a starting quarterback to speak of, unless you have a feel good about Tom Savage, which I don't. I think in terms of backup quarterbacks, Drew Stanton is more of a proven commodity, and Savage is just kind of a placeholder there. So I got the Cardinals.
I will agree with you on that one, sir. They just had so much relying on that young quarterback.
Yep.
With their, and then they also lost, you know, JJ Watt.
Yeah.
And,
That is not nothing. When a defensive like that goes down, boy.
Yeah, that's a damn shame for them. So, yeah, Cardinals for sure on that one. Although they have their problems, but they can definitely go win there. The Kansas City Chiefs at the powerhouse New York Football Giants.
I have KC. You know, they've been easy to pick this year. There was a there have been a couple of games where they haven't really looked like the dominant team we saw early, but I still think that they are a very good team and still very much in the AFC title picture. And the Giants, meanwhile, I see them trying everything from team meetings to the coach trying to bring a new management style in there to fix things, and it doesn't seem to be doing a lot for them. So it's I think this one's pretty much one the Chiefs ought to win easily, but you know, it's one of those cases where that's why they play these things, as the saying goes.
Yeah, they should handle it though.
Yeah.
I'm with you right there, same pick there. The Washington Skin Jobs at my New Orleans Saints.
Well, if we were talking about skin jobs in the Blade Runner sense, as you know, replicants, a reference that I think that if Matt is listening in, he's gone now. Yeah, he would appreciate. You know, I would definitely favor the Redskins, but I don't see any Roy Batties. I don't see any Leons. So basically, I suspect that this is just another opportunity for the Saints to try out their shiny new toy in their dominating ground game. And
right.
I think that the defense is still going to stay consistent and solid for the Saints and limit the Redskins' opportunities downfield. And I think the Saints won this one going away.
I obviously concur, and hopefully we're going to be looking at win number 8 in a row to make us 8-2. To keep that division lead and keep going, defense definitely be certainly enough to get the job done. But I think we'll put a little bit of points on them too. I think we'll run the ball on them pretty well, maybe even throw the ball on them. So sure hope so. And that's a tough. Again, hey, you never know. But I do think it's one of the tougher places to play in the league. So for an opponent, so no question about that. The Buffalo Bills at the Los Angeles, San Diego, Los Angeles Chargers.
Well, you know, I guess not conventional wisdom, but logic might dictate that if a team has a two-game better schedule than the other team, that you might go with them. But the Bills, they're benching their quarterback. They just got hammered at home, and now they're going on the road to a, you know, across country at that. And the Chargers, meanwhile, you know, they haven't been bad on offense. They just haven't put it together frequently enough to, you know, win more than they've lost. But, the Chargers, I guess you want to say they're better than their record.
Yeah.
And the Bills are not as good as their record. Pretty clearly they've been proving that.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm taking the Chargers at what we will jokingly call home. Even though the place that they're playing hasn't exactly felt like home, I'm sure.
No.
I'm sure if they could have done what the Raiders did and stayed in Jack Murphy Stadium or whatever the hell they – Qualcomm or whatever the hell the stadium was called for another season or two until their new home was built, then they would have done that. But, I've got the Chargers, but not because the fans are going to be in a screaming frenzy for them.
Right. I got them, too, just simply because, again.
So you got an up-close look at the Bills last week. That's why.
Yeah, I got to look at it. Yeah. But not only that, the Chargers have certainly not a bad football team at all. They make mistakes. They shoot themselves in the foot a lot. But I think if the Bills are now going to be going into some kind of a nosedive because of last week, that doesn't speak well for them to go on the road all the way to the coast to get a win. I mean, you never know, but yeah, I think it's just Chargers will take that one. The Cincinnati Bengals at the Denver Broncos.
Well, this is one of those games where you're featuring 2-3-6 teams with some teams. You say they've got everything to play for, and these are two teams that don't have a hell of a lot to play for. They both looked pretty anemic most of the year. I guess I've got the Broncos, but the only reason I've got the Broncos is because they're at home and both teams are about equally inept. So, you know, this is a coin flip. I won't be surprised if either team wins it, to be frank.
And so who did you pick?
I picked the Broncos at home.
Okay. You kind of lost it to my little...
Yeah. I guess I shouldn't have been definitive. I'm taking the Broncos, but this is a game that anybody can win because they're both not so great.
Yeah, and when you're in a situation like that, even when the Broncos are not that good, when they play not so good teams, just give the advantage to the sky, and that means the Broncos.
Yeah, you're right. The altitude, and plus the Broncos still have a fairly good defense, so that's probably right. A helpful thing.
Yes, and yeah, absolutely. The Boston New England Patriots versus the Oakland Los Angeles Oakland Las Vegas Raiders.
Well, I am taking the Patriots, and I don't think that's too much of a stretch. The Raiders have been
in Mexico, I should say, by the way.
Yeah, so this is the Mexico Bowl, the Battle of Mexico City. It just depends on who wants that title more. Who wants to be the Mexico City champions?
I don't want any jokes about the Taco Bowl. Sorry.
Well, you know, they could call it, you know, I could think of a bunch of fun stuff. Hey, you could call it the Burrito Bowl, too, you know.
Burrito Bowl, yeah, sure.
Absolutely. The Patriots are still hitting on all cylinders, and you know, I think we say this every week. They don't look like the dominant team that they've been in the past, but they're consistent. And sometimes in the NFL, consistent is more important than being, you know, flashy or spectacular. And that's a tribute to their, you know, coaching, as we've pointed out before. Combination of just being the best at positional coaching and on top of fleecing other teams when you need picks or players. So, yes, my selection in this game is the New England Patriots. And
all right.
That's what I see.
Well, I'm going to go with the Las Vegas Raiders.
Why the hell?
For absolutely no good reason other than I think, you know, the Patriots are going to have to stumble at some point, and the Raiders are kind of – they need to get back on a winning track, and I think they might just – I don't know. No big reason. Maybe there's enough, though.
One thing that could throw off either team is that somebody was talking about this game this week. It's actually at a higher altitude than Denver. And the Patriots have been at the Air Force Academy this week training – practicing just to try to get some acclimation, because Denver is at about the mile high city, 5,000 plus feet, and Mexico City is like 7,000 feet. I'm amazed people don't just pass out and have nosebleeds there, you know?
No kidding. I did not realize that at all. Wow.
Yeah. So I knew that it was at a higher altitude because it's cooler than you would think a city that far south would be.
Right.
But yeah, I didn't realize it was at 7,000 plus feet. I was like, damn.
I know people that live there, and I've never really heard them even talk about that. But, yeah, okay, wow. Okay, well, there you go. Good to know.
Yeah.
The Philadelphia Eagles at the Dallas Cowgirls.
Well, I have the Eagles going into the Jerry Dome and winning this one. And something that helps in that case is the fact that Ezekiel Elliott will finally be serving his suspension, and the Eagles, conversely, have no player losses of any substantial sort that I'm aware of. So I think the Eagles go in and pretty much establish their claim to being the best in the NFC East. I don't think anybody can accuse, but the Eagles there now can accuse the East of being the NFC least, as we did for a number of years. So,
yep.
I think the Eagles take it.
Yep. Yeah, I'll definitely concur with that as well. They're going to they're going to mop up the floors with the Zeke-less Cowgirls for sure. So,
right.
The Atlanta Falcons at the Seattle, the Skedaddle Sleazehawks.
Well, this is one of those games. Falcons 5-4, Seahawks 6-3. Seahawks have looked pretty good in some games and a little patchy in others. The Falcons have, especially starting off the season, they were very up and down. Last week, they looked a little more like what you'd expect them to look like, as I recall. That said, they're going into Seattle, into that place that we have both complained loudly about being a facility engineered to give an unfair advantage via noise to the home team. And I lean Seahawks. I can see the Falcons wanting to try to keep pace with the Saints and then sort of rediscovering their offense a little bit more. But I think the Seahawks win this one.
Totally agree. That hellhole is just, I mean, that had to be without their quarterback and a bunch of other people for me to pick anybody going up there against them. Usually, even though they did, I think they actually did drop one this year, but they're the Redskins, believe it or not. So the Redskins have proved they can win in a pretty tough place. So that should worry me a little bit for tomorrow. But still, they have lost Richard Sherman.
Yep.
And there's problems like that, but still, they will have no trouble with the Dirty Birds.
The Dirty Birds.
And just thinking.
Dirty Birds.
Key number 28-3. You ever seen that T-shirt? I'd love to get that T-shirt.
Oh. What's that?
There's a T-shirt out there that says 28-3. It shows just like a scoreboard of the third quarter of the Super Bowl last year when it was 28-3 in favor of the Falcons.
Oh yeah.
I love that shirt.
Oh man.
Oh, it's brutal.
Talk about
love
one
it.
Of the all-time choke jobs.
Whoo! Awesome chokity choke joke.
Man.
Yep.
It's like that chicken bone got stuck in their throat. And they
right.
They spent the fourth quarter trying to get that sucker out. It was too late.
Well, Duder, I'll tell you what. I really do appreciate it as always. I've had a great time talking, and let's hope both of our teams can make us happy for one more day there.
That would be nice.
And like I say, if you don't get to see the movie, it's no big deal. But if you do, you're more than welcome to join me. Like I say, it's if you don't like rush out to see it, then just watch it one day on the Redbox or whatever. However you want to do it. Yeah, I mean I actually didn't hate it or anything. There are a lot of things wrong with it, but it's almost more a fascinating conversation piece than a movie, because to talk about how you let one guy direct a movie, then you just hand it over to another guy to completely change it. And that clashes so much. It makes everyone who says it this way says, right, it's a mess, but it's not a bad mess.
Right.
It's not bad at all. It's just, it's weird.
I think it's going to be interesting going forward, given, like it or not, they brought Joss Whedon in to do some reshoots and so forth. But even when you do that, unless you're talking about a smaller budget movie, basically 3/4 or more of that movie, the DNA of it is the previous director. It's the guy who had to leave the picture. I mean, most of the picture was shot. And so it's ultimately on Zack Snyder, And
yeah,
it just makes me wonder about his involvement in any future Warner Brothers properties going forward, or if they're going to switch to some of their other people, like Patty Jenkins, for example, like Joss Whedon, just some of these other people who have been involved. I know they've tapped Matt Reeves for their as-yet-undeveloped Batman movie, and now we're already hearing about Ben Affleck saying he wants to make some sort of graceful exit from the role of Batman, which is kind of weird because, you'd think, well, that's kind of a choice gig. And it's almost like he's looking at it like, these people don't know what they're doing. I better get out before I become the next George Clooney, And, seriously. And so it just makes me wonder. I don't think Zack Snyder and his wing of the Warner Brothers / creative community is going to be the way they go going forward, because I think they're done with the dour, depressing, dark, humorless superhero films. I think
right.
that they see that there's more money to be made, basically, with something that's more uplifting and upbeat and more like what Marvel does. Let's just call it like it is. And it's just going to be interesting to see if Zack Snyder does have any involvement, really, other than some name in the credits, like as a producer or something going forward. And also how this might affect their production slate. Because, you know, they were kind of trying to plan movies out going forward. There was even talk of a Joss Whedon Batgirl movie. And it just kind of makes me wonder, if this movie tanks as hard as it looks like it's going to this weekend, you know, how that's going to affect which movies they greenlight and what they ultimately choose to do with the DC superhero movies. I don't think they'll stop making them, but I just don't know that they are going to be as gung-ho to make as many as they might have otherwise. So, you know, I'm just going to be curious to see how that works out.
Well, it'll be interesting. Like I said, there's when you see the if you do see the film, you can see the Snyder and you can see the Whedon. Let's put it like that. And it's mostly he manages to overpower most of the Snyder. And it's you know, that's all I can say without spoiling anything, I think.
Right.
But it's there's some really bad CGI in this thing. Jesus Christ.
Oh, no.
Oh man. Well, I don't know if you heard about the whole thing about Henry Cavill's face.
No, the mustache?
Well, the beard and the mustache. Basically, he was doing another film.
Yes, and he was contractually obligated to keep at least the mustache.
To keep it, right. So in all the reshoots, and apparently there were a lot of them, they obviously CGI, tried to CG it off. Now, I would think, if all the shit you can do with CGI now, why that would be, it just, man, his face looks fucking weird. Now, I guess if you don't know that fact about him having the beard and shit, I don't know what you would know, because I know it because someone told me about it beforehand, and you've heard it, obviously. So, but
right.
If you're sitting there, Joe Blow in there, and you go, what the fuck is wrong with his face? It's like, it looks weird. It's like, it looks like Neil Adams drew it, and I'm talking about modern-day really horrible Neil Adams. It's all twisted, and it really does, because if you look at some of Neil Adams' later Superman stuff, like this current stuff he's been doing.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, I'm like, holy shit, looks weird. And again, now we know why, but I was like, all right, but whatever. But
yeah.
Kind of strange, man.
Well,
but,
you know, that's going to be something to look for. I am specifically going to be looking at his upper lip now, if and when I do wind up seeing it.
Yeah, whole face, you'll see it. Which,
oh,
and
boy.
Again, since it's almost pretty much the whole time, it leads me to believe all the Superman stuff is Whedon.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, so.
Okay.
Costume's even brighter.
Well, I don't know. Well, I'll tell you, just talk about a movie that was just a hot mess. I mean, from having to accommodate that, you know, for the reshoots to all the reshoots they did have to do, and I hear that some of it looks very obviously like it was against a green screen. So,
yeah.
Well,
so,
yeah. It's
just,
so
lifted the whole color scheme, dude. He, you know, like he changed. I mean, it was like he took off all that dark sepia crap that what's his face likes, Snyder.
Right. Right.
Yeah. So
that Snyder likes. Yes. That sepia reminds me of what one guy described it. He was giving his review of Batman versus Superman, and he described it as a sepia-toned death march. And I was like, oh my god, that's perfect.
That's a pretty good one there. Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. Well, dude, I appreciate it again. Like
absolutely,
I said, you give me a holler if you're at game for if you're up for reviewing it. But if not, no, Biggie, I'll wing it Tuesday and just go after it as much as I can. Like I said, and I'll roll. But either way, if I don't see you before then, have a happy Thanksgiving. Hopefully, I'll see you that Saturday night next Saturday night if we're able. If I'm in town, like I said, I'm not sure exactly. We're going to try to squeeze a show in, though.
Okay.
So,
well, just
all
keep
right,
me
brother.
Posted on, keep me posted on next Saturday, and if I do go to see it, I will certainly let you know and call
okay.
in.
Okay. Well, if I don't hear from you, brother, happy Thanksgiving to you and yours, pal.
You too. You have a great holiday. Take care, and we will talk again very soon.
Indeed. Thanks to everyone out there. Appreciate it. Let's see if we can get this win tomorrow for the Saints and the Bears.
Woo! Go Bears!